been the room of many a poor girl. Girl, I know I'm wrong.
Good morning and welcome to episode 139 of Taking the Charge podcast with you from Regensburg, Germany. I am David Hein of Hein News. Thanks for stopping by yet again. Appreciate you guys listening to the show, being part of the great community, and just loving international basketball. Once again, this week, I'm not going to have a lot of time to really chat, so just going to kind of introduce the interview. I had kind of mentioned it last week that we are going to do a EuroLeague show, EuroLeague show pretty much means an automatic Sam Myerkoff sighting and from EuroLeague Adventures, obviously. So we brought cousin Sam back on. It's actually the sixth time. I think definitely cousin of the show is definitely a good distinction for Sam the man. He is already in Madrid, and I will be heading to Madrid today on Wednesday. Just getting you a podcast to enjoy some great insight from Sam. Also, what he's doing over there in Madrid, checking out some basketball, talk about a whole bunch of different things. Without further ado, Mr. Sam Myerkoff, we will catch you on the other side of that. All right. This week on the show, I counted it for a sixth time.
Nice.
Damn.
Let's do it.
Sam Myerkoff, EuroLeague Adventures. Sammy boy, Uncle Sam, cousin Sam, yeah. cousin Sam.
Sure.
Welcome to the show. Back to the show.
Happy to be here. Happy to still have the crown.
You're back in the old continent.
I am.
How's it feel?
It feels fantastic as always.
In Madrid, hanging out in the sun.
Yep, hanging out in the sun. I love this city. I've lived in this city before, so I had to come here for a month and fully get my ACB on, Spanish U18 championships, get myself primed for the Final Four.
So what's your favorite thing to do in Madrid when you come back? Other than watch some basketball.
Right, besides watching basketball. The best thing to do in Madrid is it's an insanely good walkable city. So you just pick a neighborhood, walk around that neighborhood, stop and get a caña and some tapas outside on a terrace, enjoy that, and then move along to the next place. And that's really the best thing you can do in Madrid.
So you need to have some cash.
No, it's cheap, man. You can get a caña for like €1.50. Sometimes they'll bring you tapas for free. Maybe you get a shell out like €3 or €4 for some tortas bravas. Like you're fine.
A little bit of money though.
Oh, okay, a little bit.
Obviously, with you being on the show, we're talking EuroLeague. Let's actually first start off with what you're seeing. Hey, congrats on being back on the podcast wavelengths, if you want to call them that. I think you're killing us again on as far as length goes. Last two shows over, I think combined 2.5 hours, two shows in a week. Congratulations on being back in the podcast sphere again.
Yeah. We got the EuroLeague Adventures pod rolling again, trying to get some consistency because I'm back in Europe. Ishmael Senal was on, NTV Spor, Turkish basketball, just expert. And like when he's on the podcast, I basically just turn the microphone on and let him tell stories. And ask him some questions and try and just get out of the way. I'm like Manzaris, I pass the ball to Spanoulis. We went like an hour 20 or 30 just because he yaps a lot. And then Mike Schmitz from Draft Express, who I go to college games with a lot during the year, he came on. And that went long just because there's so many like European second rounders in the draft to talk about. So, yeah, I, I don't think we'll get up there in future ones, but yeah, well, happy to be back supporting. We don't, there's not enough Euroball content in general, in English, I would say, visual, audio, written, going on right now, so we got to contribute.
Yeah, it's I ended up going back and picking up the new feed. I gave up hope that the old feed would work, and if you do have the old EuroLeague Adventures feed and you're and you don't see any podcasts,
it is now officially crashed.
Delete it, get rid of it, and restart it, and just put in EuroLeague Adventures and get it back. And there's if you haven't seen anything in a while, you know, there are a couple of podcasts there to go back on. The last two just were really great, you know, because obviously Ismail's is a unbelievable wealth of knowledge, especially in the Turkish game. And Schmitz was lots of great stuff on those draft Europeans. With me not being able to see actually quite a few of the guys, it was pretty cool to get some of that insight as well. So good job.
No question. Thanks.
So you're doing podcasts. I believe you were watching some of the U18 tournament, right? Or
yep. Yeah, I was at Spanish 8 U18s.
It went on
for like 7-8 days, and I was there for like 4 of the days.
So you saw Doncic play?
Oh yeah, I saw 3 games of Doncic.
All right, give me some insight.
Wow. I was thinking about writing an article about him before he blows up at the EuroLeague tournament this week, but I guess I don't know if I have enough time. I'm gonna try and do a wrap up of the whole Spanish U18s and some of the key guys before the EuroLeague junior tournament starts. But he's special, man. Like, he's got so much hype. He's had eyeballs on him since like 13, 14 when he went to Real. And I kind of went in being like, all right, I don't want to fall, you know, head over heels on a 16-year-old basketball player, but the guy is special. It was like, for me, it was like, I remember when I watched Dario Saric playing some junior tournaments and just killing it. I mean, the guy is just, he breathes the game. Like, it's so easy. Like, the passes, he looks like Rubio out there just dishing the ball around, the feel for the game. He's got crazy touch when he gets to the rim. He just like floats in the air and finishes. Then he'll just, you know, come out and just hit a couple catch and shoot threes. Like, there's good players. There's players who dominate and like play really well, you know, in general and in junior tournaments. And then there's like the special players, the guys who just have like a sixth basketball sense, who just dominate without even trying. And that's Doncic. And I mean, it's tough to say, like, I don't know what his pro career is going to be, like high level athleticism, yada, yada, yada. But he's going to play in the ACB somewhere, if not Real, for a little bit next year, and for sure the year after when he's 18. Like, this is he's a special, special talent. Like, the way he plays the game is just, it's unique. It's really unique.
And he only turned 16 in the end of February.
Yeah. I mean, right. He's the youngest. He was the youngest player there and literally was dominating.
99 born.
Like, dominating. Real won every game by 30 plus. He was their best player, the MVP. Even though Real was a really good team, they're studly. He ran the attack. It's like he could drop a triple-double whenever he wanted. He did it in the finals. It was just, I mean, it was honestly amazing.
Tips for anybody who's listening right now. Unfortunately, somebody asked me on Twitter, and I forgot to check and see and get the answer. They asked me if there's going to be YouTube coverage of the juniors of the ANGT, the Adidas Next Generation Tournament. I haven't found out the answer, but if you want to see Doncic this summer or this year, pretty much, this is your only chance, this might be your only chance, because I don't know what they're going to do with him this year, because 16 going to the national team, I think, might be a shade too early, though. I think
it's a shade too early.
I think it is, but I don't know. You know,
you play U18s.
It's B, though.
Slovenia's B. 16, here's the thing, too,
16 and 18 are both B. Maybe they put him to B so that they can go up and then they play next year. There's a couple other. There's
the thing is, though, he hasn't played for Slovenia yet.
He hasn't played for Slovenia yet. There was some talk that he might play for Spain. I doubt that. I doubt that. And he played for My FIBA column was on him, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, with some comments from the Slovenian National Federation. He played for Slovenia around Christmas time in a friendly tournament, and put out a tweet, I think, love playing for Slovenia or something like that. I cannot imagine he goes and plays for Spain. He didn't play last year's 16s because he was injured. I can imagine they might go play him 18s and get them up to A, because obviously it's that much better to have your players play against teams like Spain and Serbia and those countries and not necessarily Israel and Sweden, and nothing against Denmark and all them, but there's quite a bit difference. But it's unclear. Nobody knows what's going to happen with him this summer, if they're going to, let him rest, if they're going to send him out to 18s to B. But, he's B. So, and you're not going to, and you're definitely not going to see YouTube coverage of B tournaments as much as FIBA Europe is doing. All of the U18 European Championship will be on YouTube. But the A's, not the B's. So Doncic, anybody else? We know Malaga will be there. And there's a couple of nice guys on the Malaga team. Was there anybody else who really stood out? Not necessarily Doncic standing out, but from the U18 tournament.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's Spain, so it's like a. It's like an international tournament, basically. I mean, with the way these teams are, I mean, Unicaja's got guys from Congo, from Romania, Latvia. I mean, Gran Canaria, Valencia, Barcelona, Real. Like, they all have got. It's like a United Nations of basketball. There were some other. I mean, honestly, Real probably has like 5 or 6 of the best 10 or 15 players in the tournament. I mean, Felipe Dos Anjos, this giant Brazilian kid, like 7'1", 7'2". He looks like the next Tavares. Emmanuel Kate, Romanian big man. He looks like the next Felipe Reyes. Santiago Yusta, Jonathan Barrero who have starred on, Spanish national youth teams before.
Barrero actually hasn't. Barrero has actually never played for Spain.
Really? Yeah, wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, he's a great stretch four. Yusta's a tad ahead of him. I mean, he's just a dynamic player. Finished all the Doncic patches on the fast break. Unicaja, honestly, I can't even pronounce this name. I really can't even try. But they had a couple kids who were really good. This one kid, Rares Utas, who is like a big man from Romania. He was really good. I'm trying to find this guy's name. Hold on. I can attempt to say it, but it's just going to be really tough. Okay, Romeric Bellamani. He had a middle name too that was really tough. He's like a 6'7" Congolese forward who can just jump out of the gym. Made some really nice wing plays. So he's great. And. It's a rough talent year. Not talent year, but just the team in general in Barcelona didn't play well. I mean, you have Pano at point guard, Vila at the three, there's a couple other players, but they were just a mess with the way that they played. Badalona has Xavi Lopez Agosti, nice mm-hmm. little shooting guard who really played well. There were some other good players. Oh, the Lithuanian kid on Vitoria, can't remember his name right now. He's good, but yeah, I mean, there was a lot of interesting talent. I would say, as far as like top like NBA draft talent, a lot of that was on Real Madrid. But as far as like future, Tadas Sedariskis, that was the Vitoria guy.
Lithuania,
yeah. But as far as like good ACB players, Victor Moreno, shooting guard on Juan Labrada, was really good. As far as like players that are going to play ACB high level in Europe, there was a ton of guys.
Looking at, you know, looking at the Madrid roster, and I think the Malaga roster to a certain extent, and actually I think the Barcelona, if I'm not mistaken, was a little bit less. You know, one of the things I've noticed, not at Joventut, at some of the other teams, they're very, very foreigner reliant, let's call it. Do you have a sense at all that is having an impact at all on the Spanish guys, that they're, you know, either not being given the chance to play / develop, or do you sense at all that is maybe starting to have an impact, will have an impact at all, that some of these really big teams are going so reliant on foreigners?
I think it's like Spanish tradition. Like, I mean, I don't think it's that. It's not really a new thing. I mean, they've always just – the ACB itself is kind of a league of tons of Europeans. I don't think – you know, every team is still run by a Spanish point guard. You know, the rule is that, like, all the Spanish teams have African bigs, but that has, like, you know, always been the case kind of.
But the Romanians, for example.
Not the Romanians, but the Romanians are really good.
Yeah, sure. I'm not saying that, you know.
The influx of talent from around the world, you know, mainly Africa and Eastern Europe to Spanish youth teams is really good. I don't think, you know, I was wondering that because sometimes at the end of the day on Twitter, I would write like my favorite five guys of the day, and often none of them, or, you know, would be like one Spanish guy or they'd be all foreign guys, and I thought it was interesting. You know, I don't think so. There were so many good teams, and that there's a chance for these Spanish guys still. The team camaraderie seemed really good amongst most teams. It seemed like the foreign guys fit in just as well as the Spanish guys. So I don't know. I mean, on the like deeper level, I don't know if there's like players who are like, man, there's too many foreign, like, you know, some 17-year-old for Unicaja or whatever, who's like, there's too many foreigners, I'm not getting my chance. I'm not that deep in knowing that, but my guess is that it's just, you know, the more good players you have, the competition is better, and that means everyone kind of has to improve at a quicker rate, and I just think that's part of the process in Spanish youth ball now.
Okay. So let's delve quickly then into Next Generation. To me, it really seems like two teams. You know, that being really a rematch of the final, last year's final with Red Star against Real Madrid. What's your general opinion going into the ANJT finals?
Yeah, so this Real team is the best youth team I've ever seen. So I imagine they're the favorite, and I've only seen them in Malaga live. I didn't go to any of the other EuroLeague tourneys this year, but, you know, followed it, watched a little bit. Hospitalet, a lot of it was on video. What up, Basket Cantera TV? It seems to me like Real is the favorite. Red Star is a close second. And then kind of there's like a tier of maybe Zalgiris and maybe Insept, who have potentially a slight chance. You know, it's just a few games. You never know what's going to happen. And then kind of Unicaja, Stella Zura, Riga, Spars. Like, these are really good teams.
Thanks for coming.
Right, no, like, for sure, I know some people who watch Riga that really like them. For me, Malaga was a talented team. They couldn't really play together that much at the Spanish tournament, so this is a notch up. So I think overall this might be like the most talented overall group. This is my fourth Final Four that I've seen at for all the teams at one of these junior tournaments. But it seems like it's Real and Red Star if you're trying to break it down to like who's going to win it.
Well, I mean, it helps that you don't have, you know, Team England, Team China, or Team Brazil. So that's
right.
That's true. One. That's one.
Or Team England and Team China. Hello, London.
Man, we are just killing. I think that London Final Four is going to go down in history as one of the worst. But
Yeah, it'll be like the time the Magic made the NBA Finals. It'll be like one of those things.
The groups, though, you know, you look at A, that, you know, Real Madrid has INSEP, Stella Zura, and Riga. And then group B, you know, you have Red Star, then you have Spars, Malaga, and Shakiris. So
that's what I'm saying, though. Like,
that's going to be battle, and they'll be there.
Yeah, it's a great overall talent. Like, okay, Madrid is the most talented team. Red Star is really good, and they won it last year, and it's, you know, a very similar group. But everyone has enough to surprise. The only one I'm, I guess, a little bit unsure about is Spars. I know they have Atic, who's supposed to be a stud, but I know less about them than everybody else. But everyone else has enough to surprise someone on, you know, a given day if they're playing badly. So yeah, like that's why it's cool, because you lose one game, all of a sudden you're not in the championship. But yeah, like Real Madrid is ridiculous. Yeah. Like, they're a college team.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay. I agree. I don't know. You know, there's enough of the Red Star guys back that to say, you know, they're the champs, and I still think that the champs have to be defeated, and I think if they can get through their group, they will probably, in my eyes, they're the favorites. I know Real Madrid is strong, but I still think that if Red Star can play as a team, as they showed in Belgrade, they're a very, very tough team to beat. I mean, that's Real Madrid, you know, obviously there are no slouches. So I wonder, you know, what it's like for Real Madrid playing two games at 9 o'clock, though. You know, they have two games at 9, and then the other ones at 11, where then the other group, the group B, are the 13 and 15, 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. games. I wonder if the Spaniards might have a little bit of a problem, you know, waking up in the morning. I don't know.
I mean, listen, we can try and like make up stuff for them, but like, wait, and like, you know, sure, maybe 9 a.m. early wake up call. Like, who knows?
Maybe,
but
who knows?
But
man,
guess what? They're gonna dominate. You can wake these kids up in the middle of the night,
well,
Stella.
If it's anybody other than Real Madrid playing Red Star on Sunday at noon, I'll be surprised. So
they're gonna kill it. And watch out for their Spain. Real Madrid has this little backup point guard. Shouts to my guy Austin Green at loscrossovers.com, who first pointed him out to me. Andres Rico. He's like, he's not going to probably ever be Serge Rod, but he's like baby Serge Rod in the way he wants to play. Like, the guy just, the ball is a yo-yo to him, and he's awesome. So number 13, Andres Rico, is like, he's not one of these stud, you know, maybe draft prospect guys, but he's like, he's baby Serge Rod.
So do you have your Real Madrid 17 jersey yet?
No, I don't. For Luka. But I was also at the game versus Unicaja where he checked in for the first time and hit a three. So like, I'm like, me and Doncic have come up. We collided at the same time. I'm just saying, like, I happen to be here. His collision, you know, started now. Like, I don't know.
It all comes back to Sam and your league adventures.
Yeah, normally.
Okay. The big boys.
Big boys.
Starts with CSKA against Olympiacos, and the nightcap is Real Madrid against Fenerbahce. Do you want to might as well just start with the first game, huh? I don't think people have to say too much about the history go back at the history. You know, it's pretty well known. Obviously, there was the 2012 historic comeback, and then Olympiacos also beat them in the final four of the semis in 2013. Lots of talk of Kirilenko exercising demons and shit like that, and I guess, you know, it's the best offense against the best defense. Coaches, you know, this is both of their first big time their big time appearances in the final four. Your thoughts on CSKA Moscow against Olympiakos Piraeus?
Yeah, of course. There's and we have previews on EuroLeague Adventures where we talk about this, and Rob Scott asked me and a few other guys a bunch of questions. One of those questions are, do you believe in ghosts? And right, it's interesting, you know. Istanbul was like maybe the craziest basketball experience I've ever had at the Final Four. Printezis hits the shot, beats the super team of Cheska with Karolinko. We're in London. Everyone doubts Olympiakos. They win again. So I would say that this Olympiakos team is pretty similar. You know, no Kyle Hines. We got Othell Hunter is playing well. Dunstan's pretty good. But this Moscow team's different to me. Different coach, 2 days. Well, this is his first time as a head coach. I mean, he was Zoc's right-hand man for Panathinaikos for
ages.
A number of championships. Mm-hmm. The guy's been there. Like, I know he hasn't, you know, been the one making the final decision maybe, but, I mean, he's been in there for big games. I'm not worried about that at all. And he seems to fit. And, listen, this is a different Moscow team. Like, nice guy, but I've been saying for a while that Kriapa is not someone that you want to like rely on. He's a role guy, and now he's kind of past his, you know, second prime or whatever. He's a second, third area guy to them now. And the problem with Milos and crunch time, as Ishmael Sanal said on my podcast, at 2 days figure that out. He gives the ball to Dekolo. Mm. So it's a different Moscow team. So the demons are there. They have to exercise them, but like, the past 2-3 years, Moscow's been like one of the paper favorites. You know, Real was really good too. But they never felt great to pick them. You know, they never seemed like they were clicking. They seem like they're clicking this year, and it's just different. And it's a much bigger mountain for Olympiakos to come over. Even though it's one game, and even though they've done it before, it's a little bit of a different beast, I think, than like, you know, the team they played again in London, who probably was still saw those ghosts.
How fitting is it that Nando De Colo wears number one?
Yeah, right. Very fitting.
Yeah.
Very fitting.
Maybe a key guy for Moscow.
Besides like the top guys?
Sure.
Well, I think someone who's always underappreciated is Sasha Khan. And, you know, against Hunter and Dunstan, with him and Hines, like, that's a really good center matchup. And Khan's, you know, much bigger. So if they want to go size advantage, then he's going to help out a lot. And then Varontsevic has had a great year. And as a stretch guy, he can really stretch out that defense. And Olympiakos, you know, they love to run around. They have this crazy sheen. And if you can just reverse the ball quickly and Varontsevic can hit a corner three, well, then it breaks down their whole defense, then opens up room for Teodosic and Dekolo to kind of do their thing off the dribble. So, the Varontsevic, Sasha Khan will be very interesting. And those guys are ones who have lived through all of these tough losses to Olympiakos. But Varontsevic has basically been unhealthy since that Istanbul Final Four. So now that he's healthy, I'm excited to see him.
I love Varontsevic so much.
Yeah.
Amazing stat. I don't remember. Somebody posted it on Facebook, and I had to go look and just actually, I couldn't believe it. So you brought up Sasha Cohen. Do you realize that this year was his worst field goal percentage shooting year of his career in the EuroLeague, and he shot 68.8% from the floor?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I did not realize either of those things.
He went, it's been 71.3, 71.2, 71.6, 70.1. This year, 68.8. Shooting 70.1% for his career in the EuroLeague.
Absolutely. It's crazy.
Amazing.
It's crazy.
Underappreciated, right?
Yep, very underappreciated. Only takes good shots. And this might be his last rodeo, too.
Kirilenko, what kind of impact do you think, he'll have on the game? And I mean, is there any way that he can't at least think a little bit about 2012?
I don't know. I mean, it's a little while ago now. He's in a different phase in his career, so it's a bit different. But yeah, I'm sure. I don't know. I think he's a cool customer. I think he'll be fine. Like, he hasn't been living in it, you know, this like EuroLeague bubble with Olympiacos killing. He kind of just left and then he came back.
And then he's not the one who lost the tournament for them. So
no,
he lost the game for them.
He was not, even though, you know, Spinolas went by him and Prentezos at the jumper. But right now he was not, you know, like I said, it was kind of a Milos Kriapa thing, and it has been, and maybe the coach too. So those issues have been fixed. AK is not, you know, the main player on this team. He's, you know, one of. So I think last time it was like MVP, guy came back from the NBA. It was almost like he had a lot of pressure on him.
Yeah.
To come through for his team, the team he came up with. Now I don't think that pressure's there. It's not the same pressure for Cheska either. And kind of like in a weird way, like, you know, it's one of those things where they just keep losing these big games, so there's like less pressure now. I don't know. but I think they're just in a much better situation. And with Kirilenko, I think he'll be fine.
In Vasilis, we believe, I think is actually also, you almost have to say Prentezis as well.
Right.
The magic that he pulls up,
sure. You know,
comes up with. I mean, obviously, it's easy to say that that Spinulis is going to be the number one factor for them. Probably Dunstan playing really strong defense and Hunter as well, and then maybe getting some guard production. You know, Lajewski or Lafayette. You know, what do you see as the key for Olympiacos pulling out pulling another one out of the hat?
These one game offs, man, like, we almost try and break them down like they're series, like in the NBA or something, or in the EuroLeague playoffs. That's kind of how you're trained to do it, because it's like basically impossible to break down one game. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one basketball game. Someone gets in foul trouble, someone gets hot from three. Like, it just, I mean, it's one game. It's so hard to predict one game, but it's EuroLeague Final Four. It's the games that matter most, the games that everybody remember. In a series, I think Moscow is the clear favorite. In one game, with a lot of crazy Olympiacos fans there, and, you know, probably a few Russians clapping, like, you just don't know. Like, you just, that's why, that's the beauty of it. And they still have the best player in Spinulis, and DiColo's great, and Milos is good. They're just not quite on that level. Yes, it's definitely possible. But it's just, like I said, they're playing a different Cheska team, so I think it's a little bit of a new beast to climb. But I don't know. Right, there's a few kind of plugins like Lojewski, like Lafayette, like I guess Petaway was not on the London team. I don't think. Dunstan, Hunter, like, these guys haven't been through it, but, you know, the core Greek guys have. Mm-hmm. So it's a little different. But yeah, they still have the shooting. They still have Sloukas and Mantzaris, you know, the Greek guards who have been there. Prentezis, who we know is clutch, obviously. Barcelona shot recently too. So yeah, anything can happen. It's a one game off, but slight advantage, Cheska.
Is there one guy you think, I mean, kind of unfair to look at the past games that they've played, because Spinulis, I don't think, played the second game, and I don't think Kirilenko was in the first game that they played this year against each other. But is there one guy that you think that from the Olympiacos side that could maybe have a big impact on, you know, you can see maybe having a big impact on this game that, you know, maybe a little bit larger than what they normally get out of them?
Well, Mantzaris is probably going to be tasked with shutting down either DiColo or Teodosic. I guess maybe DiColo. So I would say him. It's going to be tough to bring him out because your other guards just aren't as good defensively, and Cheska has the best offensive backcourt in the EuroLeague. I mean, Teodosic, DiColo, and then Aaron Jackson when he gets in, like taking turns, like it's just incredibly tough to stop. So Manzaris is huge. I mean, he's always huge, but even when you're playing Cheska in that high powered offensive backcourt, like he's even bigger.
And then if he gets any of his bank threes, you know, that much bigger to give him that much more push defensively, huh?
For sure.
Yeah. All right, I guess let's move on to the other one.
Sure.
I can't imagine that that there'll be this letdown, this emotional letdown, you know, and after the first game, that there'll be an emotional letdown after the because, you know, Madrid, Fenerbahce, you'll have the home fans that, you know, Case Spain's not necessarily known for having great fans, other than, you know, they know how to blow into these vuvuzelas and shit like that. Mm-hmm. But obviously Fenerbahce.
Doesn't count. Worst part of the Spanish U18s, I will say, is
God,
that.
I hate that.
Like, literally, we're at youth tournaments and opposing teams are putting that up. It's like, come on, man. Yeah. Come on.
Come on. And Fenerbahce, I can imagine, I think Ismail said they're going to bring a whole bunch of fans.
He said his quote is they're going to burn the arena down.
Gotta love that.
So, yeah, they are going to burn the arena down. That's good with me.
Yeah. So, your take. Fenerbahce, Real Madrid, Fenerbahce, I guess is what it's actually called.
So, I guess Real is the team I've got the best, you know, semi-handle on. I've seen them in three games here in Madrid. Different team than the one we've seen in the past that should have won either one of or both the last two EuroLeague titles. We should be talking about them trying to go back-to-back or winning three in a row or something like that, and we're not because they couldn't win the big game.
Yep.
So it's a different team. It's a team that's not as good. It's a team that if you take Felipe Reyes off of it, they are not here by a long shot. He is the heart, soul of that team, on, off the court, everything. And they're just not as good, and they rely a lot on Rodriguez and Yule and Fernandez to do crazy individual performances. And when you're playing Obradovic, who's, you know, been waiting 2 years to get back to this here, probably the best tactical coach in Europe, the world, whatever, Real Madrid's going to have to rely on individual performances to win a 30-point game from Rudy or Serge Rod or something, or Felipe 20 and 20, who the hell knows. So I've seen them the last 3 weeks. They've been horribly sloppy, like just like they were. Good, you know, maybe a bad first half, blow them out in the second half. They beat Andorra, who's got like 10 wins in the ACB this year, with a tip-in at the end of the game by Ione. I don't know what their rotations are lineup-wise. I don't know who they're going to play. I just know they just need a great individual performance by someone, which is probably Serge Rod.
Fernandez.
Or Rudy, if you didn't play this week, but I'm guessing he'll play. It's got to be one of those guys, goes for 25, 30, hits a bunch of threes, something like that, and then they play their crazy, you know, kind of one-on-one fast break style and just hope they win, because they're not going to win a tactical matchup versus Fenerbahce, that's for sure. So the talent is still there, that anything can happen, but the team is just not, they're not in top form right now.
And
then there's
Fenerbahce.
And then there's Fenerbahce, who, I mean, no Hickman, but is. Like, they're playing, you know, they're it's all about peaking at the right time. And once again, it's one game, but you'd have to say Fenerbahce looks better.
Some of, I think, yours and my favorite guys like Nemanja Bilica, Bogdanović, Preltsic, Vesely, And Zizas, I mean, I think, you know, him coming over, you know, was a huge impact. You know, a veteran winning leader. I mean, you look at the center, you know, I know you talked a little bit about it on your podcast, but, you know, the center combination of Semih Erdan, Luka Saric, and Uga Savas, and they are in the Final Four. Hey.
But they made the adjustment to put Vesely at center more.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Which is huge.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a crazy athletic, long playmaking,
interchangeable parts.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Zox put
lots of people that can beat you.
Yeah. Yep. Very flexible team, versatile. Zeljko has put a stamp on this team in year two. You know, it's like a full Zeljko squad. And I just think he's been up like late at night for the past 2 years. Like the sabbatical year and the first year in Fenerbahce, like just late waiting for this moment. Like this dude lives and breathes Final Fours. Like that is what he is, you know? He gets here and he wins. And so it's just he has the team to do it, and it's just tough to bet against him. And like we see in European basketball sometimes, I think I mentioned this before, either here in my podcast or something, like the pressure of playing at home, whether we saw with Spain this summer at World Cup, where we've seen at Eurobaskets and EuroLeague before, is sometimes more of a like it's a detriment more than a help.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And with Real, with the losing the last two finals, like in the championship game, if things with this, you know, worst team, a little shaky, they get into a tough spot. Like, I don't know if that crowd rallies them back. I think there becomes a lot of nervous energy in the arena. Pablo Laso's job might be on the line if he doesn't win the EuroLeague. Like, I don't know if it's a help to have it at home. Granted, they've lost not at home, so who can say what? But I don't know if it's a help.
I agree with that entirely. You know, there's especially since there's the two losses in a row in the final, you know, huge expectations. You know, they still are still waiting for the title. So, yeah, I mean, if I'm Real Madrid, I don't, you know, Fenerbahce is not a team I really want to play, and Obradovic is not the coach of that team that I want to be facing. So,
but then again, who do you want to be facing? Like, I feel like talent wise, this is maybe like the best Final Four we've had in a little while. I mean, obviously they're all great, but just in terms of like maybe the best four teams made it, or the four, you know, team most talented or most interesting. Like, I feel like there's an action packed Final Four group.
Yeah,
like something's going to happen.
Yeah, for sure. Something. I mean, there's too many great stories. There's too many great personalities. There's too many, you know, great coaching storylines. You know, great teams. You know, there's the Turkish Airlines EuroLeague Final Four curse that has now ended. You know, with Fenerbahce finally making it. Bringing a Turkish team to the Final Four, you know?
Right, yeah.
You know, FS was close, but they weren't able to do it. So Fenerbahce have finally brought Turkey to, and I mean, that's going to make the Turkish fans even crazier if that's possible, you know, saying we are finally in the EuroLeague Final Four. All right. So, what do you want to do? Picks? What your thoughts are on who does it?
Yeah, I can do. I can. I mean, we'll have picks on EuroLeague Adventures, so people can find them there, and then I can do picks here too. Sure.
What do you think, then?
I think it's once again, it's a one game off, so it's like so hard. It's like predicting. I don't know what it's predicting. You know, it's just for funds. But I think I figured out what I got.
And you're just gonna,
I think
you're not.
I'm just mulling it over for weeks, and you go back and forth, and you're like, I want to pick that team, but I think that team's going to win. And like, I think I've sorted it out.
All right. And that being,
like everything.
Well, yeah, go ahead. You know, start with the first game, start with Moscow.
All right. Yeah. I really want to pick Olympiacos. Like, love that team. Love that squad. But I've got Cheska beating Olympiacos.
I don't know if I just played the same recorder that I did from 2012 and 2013. I want to pick Olympiakos, but I'm picking CSKA.
Well, so I picked them in Istanbul. I made the incredible pick. I made the initial prediction. If anyone saw the video of me running through the park in Istanbul, predicting that Olympiakos would win, like that was my, that's like my moment of like, that's like my biggest moment in European ball. Like I just, that was the best. And then I didn't pick them in London, so. Now I don't know which way I go with the jinx. Yeah, right. So I'm picking
Moscow.
Moscow. I got Fenerbahce over Real, and I got Fenerbahce over Moscow. Zeljko beats mentor versus mentee. Yeah. He takes down a 2 days. He says, no, not the first one. You don't get the first one. And yeah, that's where I'm going.
Yeah, I agree with Moscow, and I agree with Fenerbahce winning and that is the final. And you know, to be honest, the Obradovic Itoudis story is fascinating. What I really want to do is I want to try to, you know, there's all this talk in the NBA about the coaching tree from Popovich. I want to see somebody. I probably won't have time to do it, but I want to see somebody do a breakdown of the coaching tree from Obradovic, and actually Ivkovic too. Just to see who are the guys that those two have produced as far as coaches go. Mm-hmm. It's two super talented teams. It's two teams that can do a lot of different things with that talent. It's really tough to go against Obradovic. And so you kind of have to go with, in my eyes, at a game like this, you know, who are the winners on the roster? And you look at Cizes, you look at DeColo. You know, maybe you can say Bogdanovic. I think, you know, maybe you can go with Kirilenko, as far as guys who have won big tournaments. Who else do we have?
Bjelica and Bogdanovic were on the same Serbian team that finished second at the World Cup.
Yeah,
if that holds way, that's not a win.
I wouldn't necessarily. No, but I mean, we picked Bogdanovic. I said Bogdanovic too.
Any of the Spanish guys have won Eurobaskets. Serge Rod, Fernandez, Yule, Reyes. Oh, that's for Real Madrid though. But you're saying Fenerbahce and Cesca
and Moscow. It looks like those are the main guys. So you know, I'd almost have to. Oh, man, hard to go against DeColo and hard to go against Moscow, but I think you know Zizis and then Bogdanovic. You know, even Bilica, the versatility of him, and I mean, how can I go against Sipahi? You know. I really think I have to take Fenerbahce, although I don't know if I really want to. I know I'll stick by my guns and I'll pick Moscow, but I would not be shocked in the least if Fenerbahce get to their first Final Four and win it. So I am gonna go with Moscow.
Cool.
With DeColo winning the MVP.
All right.
Who's your MVP?
Oh, you want an MVP too?
Well, I figure it's going to be somebody
Nemanja,
from the winning team.
Nemanja, Bjelica.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right. That's good. Can't really complain about that.
No.
Anything else you're looking forward to in Madrid? I mean,
it's reunion weekend, buddies. Euroball.
Yeah.
So that's sweet. And it's always a great weekend. I'd recommend anyone that has not been to a Final Four to go, just because it's a very – the games are cool. The junior tournament's cool. And it just kind of meshes together into this, like, you're just talking in Euro hoops all weekend with folks. And just, like, there's only so many chances to do that and then see great games. It's like you live and die with like every second of these EuroLeague Final Four games when you're actually there. And that's cool. I mean, you're watching your computer at home, whatever, throughout the year, you follow, you talk on Twitter, you know, talk with people, but it's just, it's different when you're there and like how much one game means and just like you're following every minute and you're chatting about every little thing that happens. And then it's just cool. And then the junior tournament's also going on. So I think It's just one of those weekends, man. It's just one of those weekends throughout the year you always look forward to.
Basketball must.
Yeah, no question.
Basketball must.
And I honestly think this is a special one. Like, I really think mm-hmm. I'm really
both
think
tournaments. This, both tournaments.
Both tournaments. Like, this is just, I don't know, man. Like, it's just something, it just, I have a just intuition, like something's going to happen this weekend, like something sweet. I don't know exactly what.
Something magical. But,
something magical is going to happen. I don't know. Maybe Doncic goes from a junior tournament and throws on the pro sweats. But like, I don't know, man. I just think something's going to happen. So when you get that feeling with the EuroLeague, like you just, you know, so just glue your eyes. Just watch. Like something's going to happen.
Yeah, I can't wait. You know, like I've said in the past couple of months, actually, you know, I haven't had much time to breathe basketball at all. But, you know, I am totally savoring this weekend and getting out of my daily routine to head over to Madrid and be in a gym at 9 o'clock in the morning all day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then
it ends a little earlier though.
Hey, Friday, there's gonna Friday six games, man. Four ANJT and then the semifinals.
Oh, right. Four, right.
Six games of basketball.
It seemed like the Adidas tournament because it starts early, it gets out early. So
yeah.
And it's a noon tip for the championship on Sunday. And normally I think it was like a 9 or 10 AM tip.
I don't know if it was that early.
I always remember it being in the morning.
Yeah, well, if they tip off at 11:59, it's still the morning.
Well, anyway.
Shut up, Hein.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's EuroLeague. I did want to ask you actually about one more thing. You guys had on your podcast when you had Mike Schmitz, right? Mike.
Yep.
Mike. One of the guys that you brought up, you guys started talking a little bit about guys who Americans who will be playing, who you think might do well here in Europe.
Right.
And one of the guys that you brought up was Aaron White. And I didn't really follow any college basketball this year from Europe, but I was in Seattle for the first and second round, or whatever you want to call it, second and third round of the NCAA tournament, and I was there. And I was sitting next to, I can't remember, it was Bleacher Report or one of the, you know, Sports Nation or, you know, one of the bigger blogs.
Those guys.
One of the bigger blog sites. And I was talking, I think their West Coast Conference guy. And I, you know, he was West Coast basketball. And I was like, it was funny because I was there totally looking for guys that not would be in the NBA, but that could play in Europe. And it's funny that you brought up White because he was one of the guys I thought, you know, he's like, the guy said, yeah, they're getting, you know, he's getting talk about being in the NBA. And I'm like, I don't know where he's going to be able to play in the NBA just because of his size, but, you know, he'll be great in Europe. So thoughts on Aaron White, you know, do you think that somebody, you think that he ends up in the NBA or do you think that he'll come over and make some team really happy, about having a guy with that much versatility, that much game.
Yeah, love Aaron White. Got so much game, so versatile. Almost like a point forward, great slasher, sees the game, and also has like ups, can really get up, can probably play either forward position, starting to shoot it better. But in the NBA, I don't know what his role is. They're almost going to ask him just to be like a stretch big man. Like he's going to be very, very specialized. I think the thing is this year, the second round is really weak, and people are looking for people to draft, and Aaron White had a really good second half of the year, good tournament, good Big Ten tournament, and it's like, you know what, maybe this is a guy worth taking a chance on at, you know, 51, and once you get drafted, then all of a sudden it's like, well, maybe I can make the team. Is it worth going to a training camp? Do you just try 1 year just to see if you can make it, and then maybe go to Europe your second year? So... And, you know, with the NBA salaries, they're getting really good. And the market in Europe is just okay right now. So I think it's tough. But I think it's one of those things where he in Europe would be able to display his full skill set and be a really good player. In the NBA, he would have to be a specialized, you know, certain bench player. And so basketball-wise, he just fits better into Europe. And I loved him all year. So I think... Yeah, I think he's just one of those guys that just fits better into Europe. But, you know, there's so much goes into these decisions beyond that. But if we're just talking just purely on the court basketball, like, Yeah, the guy, he's a gem for Europe. I'm glad you got to see him up close in person.
Yeah, I was really excited. Another guy actually that was in, another guy who played in the state of Iowa, another guy who was actually in Seattle for that first and second round was Northern Iowa's Seth Tuttle. Did you have a chance to see him at all? He was another guy that I thought could come over and flourish once he kind of gets used to the differences of the game.
Yeah, so Seth Tuttle had an amazing year. He was either first or second team All-American for a Northern Iowa team that does not normally, you know, get those type of players. They were in Wichita State's conference to help people out here. Really good year. So he was like, I don't know, the whole offense revolved around him in Northern Iowa. It's almost like he could do whatever he wants. Good passer. Can take people off the dribble at like power forward center. So I was at the Portsmouth Invitational, and he, I mean, it's just like, I don't want to pile on him too much because it's just like he had like probably one of the worst Portsmouth performances like anyone's ever had. He, you know, he will never have scored a point at Portsmouth. I mean, he, the whole week we're talking about up and down basketball, he didn't score. Okay. It was kind of crazy. He was, the athleticism was, you know, too much, and I don't know, he then like the confidence was rattled and he was just off. And so it was just like a horrible setting for him. I felt bad because it's not the player he was. He had such a good season, but whew, didn't score at all. So I think for him it's finding a role, right? He's so versatile. He can do so many things. And while Aaron White is like a star player, I think Tuttle is not quite at that level. So he needs to figure out his role more. So I don't know. Maybe he's like a stretch four if he can shoot a little better. I agree with you. There's a place for him, but maybe he just needs a little more seasoning.
All right. I figured you had seen him more than I had, considering it was only two game. No, one game.
Yeah. But White's awesome, man.
Yeah.
White's great. He's a cool player.
Yeah. I enjoyed watching him for sure. So you guys have one more podcast before the...
We're going to try and crank one out so you can listen. If you have one of those longer plane flights, maybe you're coming from Istanbul, you can be able to dip into the Taking the Charge and the EuroLeague Adventures pod. So you'll get a full wrap-up from all angles.
Excellent. Sam, everybody who listens to the show also has already heard you, but go ahead and pimp your stuff where everybody can see you and read you and whatever.
For sure, at Hoop Like Drazen on Twitter, or the websites at Euro_Adventures, EuroLeagueAdventures.com. Check my guy Rob Scott, at RobScott33, who pumps out more EuroLeague content than I do. So, and he'll be in Madrid too. And we got previews coming up this week. We'll have a podcast. I'll have something on my Spanish U18s. And just read, and we're just trying to just Euroball forever. So just read it, listen, watch, please. That's all we want.
Is Simon coming out too?
He will not. He will not. I think Simone will be at Eurocamp potentially. Okay. But didn't make the Final Four this year.
Didn't make
last
the cut.
Year. last year maybe there was maybe the EuroLeague didn't help out with credentials so much. So
That's right. That sometimes that's
so maybe you need a credential to make the trip. So yeah,
that's true.
So there are other factors going on.
We love you, Simone. We love you, man.
Yeah.
All right, Sam. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. We'll see you in Madrid. By the time this podcast comes out.
Sure. All right, awesome.
Take care.
All right. Later, Dave.
Okay. So like I say, I really think that big single games always kind of seem to go down to the biggest stars, and as much as I love those Fenerbahce guys, a guy like De Colo is just I think he's, this is gonna be a big barometer for him to see where he stands, as far as a leadership standpoint. Wouldn't be surprised if the French coach is there to check him out. I have to keep my eyes eyes open. There's also Incept there at the yearly at the Adidas Next Generation tournament, so maybe he might stop in there and check around. I don't know what his club is up to right now. Yeah, have CSKA Moscow winning, and also have Red Star winning the under winning the ANJT ANGT. Sorry about that. Yeah, so with that, I think I'm going to call it a day. Have quite a few things to do before I head out. Actually not yet gone, for Spain, but I will be leaving, very, very shortly, and I have lots of things to do. So, with that, just to let you know what you're going to listen to. It's called, Haunted House of the Rising Sun. And it is by Kathleen Martin. And, of course, it is available on freemusicarchive.org. Go check it out. And with that, we will catch you next week with a full recap of what's going on in Madrid. So enjoy it, and enjoy the excellent NBA playoffs, at least some great finishes to games. So we'll catch you next week. With one foot on the
Sunny Wings, the Chess of Moscow, with Dave and Ozzy. You're listening to Taking the Charge.